screw, the whole rear of the cabinet swung away to reveal a narrow space, maybe 2 inches deep. I had expected to find a few file folders inside, but instead the space held snapshots of original segments of comic strip artwork. Each piece of artwork contained a framed print of a comic strip and the negative used to produce it, the same kind of stuff Rocco had hanging in here on the walls. If I remembered rightly, he had said such segments were worth big bucks. This artwork portrayed Baby Herman strips. Roger Rabbit appeared in all of them, so they must be fairly recent. Each segment had been signed by its photographer, Carol Masters, in every case. I flipped one of the snapshots over and found a price penciled on the back. $5,000. Certainly not small potatoes on my side of town, but hardly the mighty moolah Rocco had led me to believe the stuff fetched. Of course, what I knew about art you could put into one blank of a paint-by-numbers set. Maybe these were inferior quality segments and didn't command very high a price. But if that were the case, why go to so much trouble to hide them? I studied the segments up close, but couldn't see any difference between them and the ones on the wall. One of the segments did have a familiar look to it, but I couldn't place it. And it was hardly likely that I'd have seen it in the paper, since I never read the funnies. I put the snapshots in my pocket, closed up the compartment, and pushed the filing cabinet back into place. Next, I went to work on Rocco's desk. He kept his desk calendar inside his upper center drawer. I checked it for yesterday and discovered he had penciled in an appointment at home with someone he identified only by the initials S.S. The meeting was set for 11 o'clock p.m., barely an hour before he had been killed. In his bottom drawer, I found a few books on ancient mythology, and that was about it. I stuck my head out the door and asked Dominic to rejoin me. "Any luck?" he asked. "Maybe," I answered. "How about giving me some background to set my findings into perspective?"
"Shoot."
"What's your opinion of Jessica Rabbit?" He picked up a letter opener and jabbed it so hard into his desktop blotter that it cut through to the wood beneath. I wondered if anybody in the world besides Roger saw any good in that woman.
"She was a bimbo when he met her, and she's still a bimbo. I never could figure out what he saw in her."
"How did they meet?"
"Rocco discovered her dancing in a slimy downtown strip club. He took her out of there, groomed her, bought her expensive clothes, and taught her to act. As her way of saying thanks, she dumped him for a stupid rabbit."
"But she did come back to him," I pointed out. He pulled the letter opener up and took a piece of the blotter with it.
"Sure, she came back to him, but only when she found out that the rabbit couldn't give her what Rocco could. She was out for nobody but herself, and Rocco would have been better off without her. I told him not to take her back, but the guy loved her so much he would have forgiven her anything."
"The word is that Jessica pressured Rocco into giving Roger a contract. You know anything about that?"
"Not really. Like I said, I never got involved much in the business end of it. I personally never wanted to sign the rabbit. I never thought he had all that much talent. But Rocco insisted, although he never once gave me a good reason why. Said it was just a hunch he had, a feeling. But I always thought, pretty much like everybody else did, that it was really Jessica behind it. He took the rabbit on because Jessica asked him to. Sure, it turned out to be the right move. The rabbit wound up making a spiffy second banana, but nobody would have guessed that going in."
"Roger insisted that Rocco promised him a solo strip. Any truth to that?"
"I don't know. Like I said, I didn't get involved much with that end of it. But it wouldn't surprise me. If Rocco wanted someone bad enough, he'd promise them anything. Never put it into the contract, though. He'd tell the character that it wasn't necessary, that it was his word, and he always kept his word."
"Did he?"
"You kidding?"
Dominic tried to laugh, but I don't think he had ever learned how.
"Nobody could lie like Rocco."
"Supposing for a minute that Roger didn't kill Rocco, do you think that Jessica could have?"
"I can't figure why. Rocco gave her everything she wanted. It would have been like snuffing the goose that laid the golden egg."
"Does Jessica stand to inherit Rocco's estate?" He stoked up a slim, black, unfiltered cigarette, centered it in his mouth, and blew smoke out of either side around it.
I don't know. The will ain't been read yet. The lawyer does it tomorrow, right after the funeral.
You know the rabbit's dead, too. He flipped his match into his wastebasket. He didn't have to worry about starting a fire. His wastebasket held no paper. He was either very neat or very unproductive. No question which got my vote.
I heard, and I think it's a real shame.
You do?
Yeah, I think it's a shame that somebody else got to him before I did.
He hacked another piece out of his blotter.
After what he did to my brother, it would have given me great pleasure to shoot that rabbit myself.
Any idea who might have spared you the trouble? He shrugged and shook his head. Do you think Jessica could have done it?
Possible, I suppose. I think she could kill anybody, anytime, anywhere.
I held up the comic strip segments I had found in the secret compartment. You know anything about these? Dominic took them and looked them over. He read them, but only with great difficulty, by running his fingers across them and sounding out the words.
Where did you get these? You didn't have them when you came in.
They were in Rocco's bottom desk drawer. What are they?
There's some segments that disappeared from Rocco's gallery about a month ago. Rocco had this place downtown that he used as an outlet for this kind of art. His son, Little Rock, runs it for him. One day these segments turned up missing from there. Little Rock couldn't explain how. Rocco never reported it because he didn't want to publicize the sloppy way the kid ran the gallery. He figured that would only invite in more thieves.
What about the prices on the back? Dom turned the segments over. At least he read numbers.
I don't keep up much with prices, but these look to be awful low. It could be that somebody offered them to Rocco for sale. He dealt in original segments all the time, so it would be natural for somebody who had them to see if Rocco wanted to buy. Maybe the seller didn't know they were stolen. Or maybe the thief got Rocco to pay to get them back. Rocco probably would have done it to protect his kid's reputation.
Your brother had an appointment with somebody last night. Somebody with the initials S.S. You know who that might have been?
S.S. Beats me.
What about mythology?
Huh?
The study of ancient legends. Your brother had some books on the subject in his desk. You have any idea why?
Probably research material for a new strip. He did a lot of that. He'd get the idea, work out and cast the characters, and then turn it over to some photographer and writer team to script up and shoot.
I took the comic segments back from Dominic. You mind if I hang on to these for a while?
Be my guest. Just make sure I get them back.
I was almost out the door when, almost as an afterthought, Dominic said,
"By the way, as long as you're poking into that rabbit's affairs, maybe you could do me a favor."
"If I can."
"What?"
Dominic lowered his voice and became as coy as a debutante, sidling up to a bowl of spiked punch.
"Well, when Rocco and the rabbit were having their run-in, the rabbit, when they swiped something out of the office here, it was a family memento, and it was very precious to Rocco and me. The rabbit took it, I think, because he figured he might be able to hold it for ransom or something. I'd appreciate it if you could keep your eye out for it. If you come across it, I'd be willing to pay you to get it back."
"What exactly was it?"
"Nothing valuable. It's a tea kettle."
"A tea kettle, you say?"
"Yeah. It belonged to my grandmother. She gave it to me and Rocco just before she died. We used it to brew tea here in the office."
"Describe it for me," I said, although I had a sneaky hunch exactly how the description would go.
"It weighs about 3 pounds and has gray paint on the outside. There's not much else I can tell you about it. It looks like any other cheap tea kettle. Will you keep your eye out for it?"
"You bet. Glad to do it. You wouldn't believe how interested I am in finding that tea kettle." The guy could have done wonders with oranges at breakfast, judging from the way he wrapped his gigantic hands around mine and squeezed.
"You know, Valiant," he said, I'm starting to like you.
Now that really made my day. I can honestly say I had met tunes brighter than this bozo. 17.
Fresh from a session with one dumbbell, I wanted nothing less than to spend my lunch hour with another, but no such luck. My apartment door lock bore the same amateurish pick marks I had found on the locks at my office. Roger Rabbit, apprentice locksmith, strikes again. I opened the door and went in. I found the rabbit bustling around in the kitchen, making a monumental production out of throwing stuff into a pot. "Welcome home," he said, dipping a big wooden spoon into his bubbling cauldron and bailing out a taste. "Lunch will be ready in a jiff." He had a bath towel wrapped around his waist, apron fashion. "I hope you don't mind my using your kitchen. Since you've been so kind to me, I thought a nice meal was the least I could do to repay you. So I picked up a few odds and ends at the store and threw something together." I squeezed past him, opened the cupboard under the sink, and poured myself a dose of liquid composure. The rabbit handed me a cocktail napkin. A cocktail napkin. I wondered if he also had a cigarette girl stashed in the hall, ready to flounce in and sell me coffin nails at $2 a pack. I tossed down another slug, wiped my lips on the rabbit's cocktail napkin. It had "Down the Hatch" printed across it in 10 different languages. Wadded it up and stuffed it into the trash deeply enough, I hoped, so the janitor wouldn't find it and give me a rough time about going high class on him. "Quit picking my locks," I said, as sternly as you can to a rabbit wearing an apron. "Here." I reached into the drawer where I kept my spare keys, took out two, and gave them to Roger. "This one opens my apartment. This one opens my office. Do me a favor and use them from now on." The way he looked at them, you'd have thought I'd just given him the crown jewels of England.
"Thank you, Mr. Valiant," he said.
"I'll guard them with my life." "And knock off this Mr. Valiant stuff. Call me Eddie, like everybody else."
"Oh, yes. Thank you, Eddie."
He flashed me a grin sunny enough to grow pansies in a window box. I went to the stove, lifted his pot lid, and found a lot of vegetables boiling in water. "What's this?"
"It's ratatouille," he said.
"That mean you make it with rats?"
"You never knew. Toons eat some of the weirdest stuff." He guffawed.
"No, hardly. It's a vegetable stew. You prepare it with eggplant, zucchini, tomatoes, Swiss cheese, and spices. It's very tasty."
"Yeah, I'm sure it is, and it sounds great. But I'm on this special diet. Doctor's orders."
I opened my freezer, took out a turkey pot pie and some frozen French fries, and slid them into the oven.
"You're back early," I said. "Give up on being a detective?"
"Hardly."
The rabbit proudly puffed out his skinny chest.
A mountaineering mouse would have had a field day scaling his protruding ribs.
"I finished both my assignments, so I came back here to report in."
"You got everything I told you to?"
"Sure did."
The rabbit wiped his paws on his towel apron, went into my closet, and took a book from out of my pea coat pocket. The book, published by some scholarly society with about 10 words in its name, all of them 3 syllables or more, traced cartoon history from the late 1800s on. Roger opened the book to a page near the end.
"There it is," he said.
I took the book. The page showed the tea party scene out of the Alice in Wonderland remake. Alice herself sat at one end of a long, rustic table. The white rabbit sat at the other. In between them sat a titmouse, a grinning Cheshire cat, and a beagle who looked kind of familiar. I tapped my finger on the dog.
"Who's the mutt?" I asked.
Roger's cheeks flushed a bright red.
"That's me. I told you I had a minor role in the film."
"You played a beagle?"
Roger stirred his pot a few stout licks, banging the spoon vigorously on the edge to clean it off.
"The rabbit part went to Bugs Bunny. He was really hot that year and totally monopolized rabbit roles. He had just won an Academy Award, and everybody wanted him. While he made this movie, he also appeared on Broadway in that redo of Harvey, where the human's the invisible one, and he shot a million commercials.
With nothing in the rabbit line available, I read for the part of the dog, and got it. It wasn't much, but it was something. I studied the photo. I'm impressed. You look great. If I didn't know, I'd swear you were really a beagle. Thanks. I worked hard at it. I wore brown face makeup and folded my ears to either side of my head, and I spent hours learning to woof. In my big scene, I fetched a stick for the Queen of Hearts. I got a brief mention from Rex Reed in his review. It's at the house in my scrapbook. If we ever go back, I'll show it to you. It's the first real review I ever got. I can still quote it. A young unknown named Roger Rabbit played the beagle so convincingly, it sent fleas up and down my spine. This the tea kettle? I pointed to the object set in the middle of the photographed table. That's it. See what I told you? Nothing but a cheap, ordinary tea kettle. Certainly seems to be. I grabbed the page and ripped it out of the book.
Do you know what you just did?
Wailed the rabbit.
You just tore a page out of that book.
Good observation. We'll make a detective out of you yet.
But that's a library book. You're not supposed to tear pages out of a library book. It's on my card. I'll have to pay a fine.
I looped my arm around his shoulder. Sometimes in this detective game, you have to step outside the law. My oven timer informed me that my lunch had thawed. Roger and I sat down at my kitchen table. He, with a bowl full of his veggie stew, me with my pot pie and French fries. You stole that tea kettle off the movie set, you say?
Right, as a souvenir.
He pointed to the pot of stew. There's plenty in there. You sure you won't have some? It did smell pretty good, for rabbit food, that is. Curiosity got the better of me. Maybe just a taste, I said. He ladled me out a generous helping. I saw Dominic DeGracy this morning, I said. He says that tea kettle belonged to him and Rocco. He says it was their grandmother's, and she left it to them when she died. He says that you stole it from out of their office. He says it's very precious to him, and he's willing to pay to get it back. The rabbit sent up a pair of speechless balloons, as flat, empty, and stark white as two pieces of bread popping out of a broken toaster. On his next try, he did better. His words came out a mystified, translucent gray, but readable.
Dominic said that? About my tea kettle? Absurd. I acquired the tea kettle exactly the way I told you I did. And what would he want with it anyway?
I don't know. But that tea kettle is shaping up as a very important element in this case. I finished off my bowl of stew and figured that, since the rabbit had gone through so much bother, I ought to be polite. You got any more of this stuff?
Plenty. Let me get it for you.
He took my bowl and filled it to the brim with seconds. If you didn't steal that tea kettle from the DeGreases, how did Dominic know you even had it?
I have no idea.
He ever come over to your place? Maybe see it there?
No, never.
You ever mention it to anybody?
Hardly. The subject of tea kettles rarely comes up in conversation.
What about Jessica? She must have known you had it.
Of course she did. I used it every day.
So she could have told Rocco about it. Or Dominic.
She could have, but why she would, I can't imagine. Let me stress again, that was a perfectly common tea kettle. There was absolutely nothing special about it.
Not to you, at least. Still being polite, I got up and helped myself to a third bowl of stew. You know anybody in the cartoon business with the initials S.S.?
Lots of people. Sad Sack, Stumpy Squirrel, Super Savage, Sarah Smile. The list goes on and on. Why?
Rocco had an appointment at his house last night with somebody with those initials. The appointment was for 11 o'clock, only an hour before he died. Any of the people you mentioned have a grudge against Rocco?
Well, he was hardly the sort of man likely to be selected mayor of Toontown, but I don't think any of the people I listed hated him enough to kill him.
How many of them did Rocco have under contract?
I don't know exactly. Stumpy Squirrel and Super Savage, for sure. Probably more.
I went back for one final dollop of stew, but the pot was empty. "What you got for dessert?" I said, mostly in jest. But Roger immediately hopped up, went to the refrigerator, and brought out a Boston cream pie. He carved out a man-sized chunk and served it to me, together with an excellent cup of freshly brewed coffee. "What about the 38? I asked 5 minutes later, the first time I had an empty mouth. "You have much luck tracing that?"
"Some."
Roger pulled out a notebook identical to mine and flipped it open. "The gun was reported stolen several months ago. That's about it. I had no idea where to go next, so I didn't pursue it any further." I took his notebook and wrote a few names and addresses into it. "Here's a list of shady gun dealers. Start with them. See if they've heard anything. If the police have been nosing around, chances are one of these guys will know it." I dumped my dirty dishes into the sink. The ones that had been there when I left this morning had all been washed and stacked neatly on the drain board. A regular ball of fire as a cook and housekeeper, this rabbit. I might be tempted to keep him around permanently, if he did floors and windows, too. Also, follow up on the tea kettle angle. Ask the studio's prop man. See where he got it. Maybe, if we can trace it to its origins, we can figure out why the greasy wants it so badly. And check out every double S initial tune character in the DeGreasy stable. Find out if any of them had a recent beef with Rocco, and see where they were last night when Rocco died.
"That's a pretty heavy workload," Roger griped.
"Hey, nobody said detective work was easy."
"What are you going to do?"
he asked. "I've got a few leads of my own to follow up."
"Aren't you going to tell me what they are? I thought we were partners in this case."
"We are, but sometimes even partners have to keep their little secrets from one another. See you tonight," I told him, as I went out the door. 18. Put a figurehead over the front door and a brace of smokestacks on the roof, and you could have sailed Rocco DeGreasy's place across the North Atlantic. I made a quick count of the windows as I strolled up to the front door. I hit 18 and still had two floors to go. I suppose there must have been a doorbell, but I didn't feel like spending half an hour searching for it among the gewgaws carved around the entryway. I hammered the door with my fist instead, setting off a resounding echo inside. The butler who opened the door must have come as an accessory to the house, since his face had the same smooth, pasty-white texture as the granite walls outside. When he saw me standing there on his front stoop, he crinkled up his nose the way a dowager would when passing a garbage can. He offered to take my hat. I told him I didn't trust him with it. He ushered me into a living room only slightly smaller than the tenement apartment where my mother had raised her four kids. He told me Madam would join me shortly, and retired. Jessica came in, carrying one of those toon cats that look like Felix, and come in any color from chartreuse to candy apple. This one matched her violet eyes. Jessica wore a clingy, pastel green number. I would have expected someone with her sense of the dramatic to play the mourning role to the hilt, and go with black. Of course, the outfit she had on did cover her from ankle to shoulder, and maybe she considered that to be penance enough.
"Mr. Valiant," she said with that seductive voice.
She held out her hand a little too high to shake, a little too low to kiss, but just about the right height to pat my head if I bowed down before her.
"A pleasure to see you again. Whatever can you be investigating now? I'm sure, being a detective, you know that your client is dead."
I left her hand hanging there in midair, and let her figure out what to do with it. Dead or not, he paid me for 3 days' work, and I mean to give him his money's worth.
"How do you propose to do that?" she asked.
She set her cat down on the floor. It proceeded to amuse itself by conjuring up some mental mice, which it stalked around the room. I sat down on the sofa. Rocco had a humidor of expensive cigars set on the coffee table. I opened it and helped myself to a fistful, figuring Rocco didn't need them anymore. I put one of them into my mouth, fired it up, and sucked it to life. For starters,
I aim to prove that Roger never killed Rocco.
Instead of taking a chair, Jessica kicked off her shoes, sat on the floor at the end of the coffee table, and rested her head against the arm of the sofa not 6 inches from my knee.
You've got a long uphill struggle there, Mr. Valiant. From what the police tell me, it's a straightforward case. Roger had a motive. They found the murder weapon in his house. What have you got? New evidence? If so, it had better be pretty good.
No new evidence. Nothing except the basic belief that Roger didn't have what it takes to kill somebody.
Whatever gave you that idea?
My vast experience with human nature. She laughed softly.
All well and good, except remember, we're talking about a rabbit here.
It works pretty much the same way.
You're the detective.
She reached into an alabaster box and pulled out a violet cigarette that also exactly matched her eyes.
Some people just don't know when to quit.
She lit her colored coffin nail, set it into an ashtray, and promptly forgot about it. It smoldered into eternity, silently begging for one more touch from her gorgeous lips.
Just for laughs, I said. Let's you and me assume Roger didn't kill Rocco.
All right, I'll play. Despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, Roger didn't kill Rocco. Where do we go from here?
We draw up a list of who else might have.
That would be a pretty long list. Half the civilized world, and at least that many aborigines.
She placed her hand on mine, and my heart went pity-pat. Can you believe it? Pity-pat. She should register those hands as deadly weapons.
Rocco was not a well-loved man, she told me, as I'm sure you've discovered already. His stars resented their ironclad contracts and the way he continually pushed them to the limits of their endurance.
So we've got everybody who worked for him. Who else? What about the financial end of it? Who's going to inherit his estate?
When she shook her head, her hair brushed across my fingertips and gave me the same tingle you get when somebody runs a feather across your stomach.
I don't know for sure. Rocco and I never discussed the matter. I suppose the bulk of his estate will go to his son, Little Rock.
Tell me about him. She laughed again, but there wasn't much mirth to it.
I think you could safely count him out as a suspect. Little Rock couldn't kill a fly. He lacks the drive and sense of purpose necessary to plan it and bring it off.
That's why we have second-degree murder, the unpremeditated variety, for people who are too lazy to plan ahead.
She shrugged, and one side of her dress slipped down to reveal her shoulder.
You know if Rocco had any recent business dealings with anyone with the initials S.S.?
S.S. No, not that I can recall.
I found snapshots of some stolen artwork in Rocco's office downtown. He ever mention anything about such stuff to you?
Not a word.
I blew my next question at her across the red-hot tip of her dead lover's fine cigar. And where were you when Rocco died?
Her eyes sparkled. Toons can do that with their eyes. Usually it comes across affected and ridiculous. But when she did it, it made me want to cuddle her and coo inanities into her ear.
I hope you don't suspect me of killing him.
I haven't knocked anybody off the suspect list yet.
She shrugged again.
To my dismay, the other side of her dress held the line.
I went to a movie, and then for a walk. I went alone, and no one saw me. I came home around 12:30, and found Rocco dead in his study. I immediately called the police. In practical terms, I have no alibi, but I also have no motive. I'm not bad, Mr. Valiant. I'm just drawn that way.
You mind if I take a look at the scene of the crime?
The police already went over it.
The police have been known to miss things before.
Jessica, standing up, reminded me of a skyrocket heading for outer space. One long, straight line of fire and smoke.
Sure, go ahead. It's just across the hall there.
I went inside Rocco's study. The place was filled, top to bottom, with shelves, containing probably every comic book Rocco had ever produced. From what the cops had told me, after being shot, Rocco had fallen forward across his desk, though I didn't see how he found room. He had enough doodads on top of the desk to stock 100 novelty toy shops. Most of them were little plastic or rubber wind-up contraptions, depicting the tunes in his stable. I found Roger Rabbit. I twisted his tail, set him down, and he hopped from one side of the desktop to the other. The toy appeared to be discolored. When I picked it up and examined it closely, I saw it had Rocco's blood on its paws. Good thing I wasn't much on mystical significance. I poked through the desk's drawers until I found Rocco's checkbook. I opened it and examined the last few stubs. He had written 3 checks yesterday. The first 2 were for $10,000 each. The stubs indicated both had been paid to the mysterious SS. The third and last stub indicated a check to a downtown art dealer, the High Tone Gallery of Comic Art. I did some mental arithmetic and figured out that the amount of this check equaled the sum total of the prices marked on the stolen artwork photos I had found in Rocco's office. I poked around some more inside his desk, checked behind his pictures, rifled through about 100 of his comics, and even looked under his rug. I was just about to give up when I struck pay dirt in the fireplace. A small, scorched piece of comic book negative stuck up through the grate. The negative contained an issue number but no title. I put the scrap into my notebook and rejoined Jessica in the living room.
"Find anything?" she asked.
She held up a crystal decanter. I nodded, and she poured us each a double jigger. "Nothing. I guess the police took away everything of any importance."
"That it for the grilling, then?"
"Not quite. We've still got another murder to go." I demolished my drink and built myself a second. "Where were you when Roger died?" She marched her delicate fingers around the edge of her glass.
"Still walking the streets."
"Not past Roger's house, by any chance?"
"Nowhere near."
"You know Roger mentioned you in his last words."
"So the police told me."
"Any idea what he meant by it?"
"None."
She put her untouched drink down beside her untouched cigarette. If she kept up at this rate, pretty soon she wouldn't have a vice left in the world, and no idea how she got so pure.
"I know you and the police both consider me a prime suspect in Roger's murder," she said. "But I'm not worried. Why should I be? I'm totally innocent."
"So said half the guys on death row, but I didn't tell her that." I fished around a while longer, but came up with nothing new. So I got up to go. On the way to the door, she moved in very close to me. So close I could feel her breath warming my throat when she turned her head to speak.
"I'm rather sorry the interrogation's over," she said. "You fascinate me, Mr. Valiant. I've never met a man quite like you. I hope you'll come back and see me again, when you can stay a bit longer."
She flashed me a smile, torchy enough to illuminate a midnight fertility dance. I wanted to kid myself into believing her, but no dice. Granted, she had married a rabbit, and I had to be better than that. But no way could I ever picture myself a winner in this girl's romantic sweepstakes. She wanted something else from me. I didn't have to wait long to find out what.
"Since you're going to keep pursuing this case anyway," she purred, "there's a favor you might be able to do for me."
"Name it," I said, surprised at how hard I found it to talk without gasping.
"During my marriage to Roger, the two of us once bought an antique at auction. I always had a special fondness for it. Roger told me to take it with me when I left, but I forgot it. I would like very much to retrieve it before the courts dispose of Roger's personal belongings. I asked the police about it, but they told me there was no such object in the house. I wonder, if you should come across it during your investigation, could you see that I get it? It has a great deal of sentimental value to me.
What is this object? I asked, although I already had a pretty fair idea what her answer would be.
Nothing particularly valuable. An antique tea kettle. Roger kept it on the stove in his kitchen.
Sounds simple enough. I'll see what I can do.
I would appreciate it a great deal.
To show me just how much a great deal could be, she kissed me, full on the lips. She tasted of rose petals and honey. Her tongue caressed mine like a cool breeze on a steamy night. She let me go, and stepped back from me with a self-satisfied smile on her face that told me she thought she had my number. I have a hunch the lustful smirk on my face told her she was absolutely right. Whatever that tea kettle turned out to be, I knew who had first dibs on it in my book. 19. I went back to my office and let my bottom desk drawer buy me a drink. On the other side of the wall I could hear my next-door neighbor, an accountant with thick glasses, clickety-clacking his adding machine. I envied the guy. Must be nice to have a job where everything added up. Rarely see it in my line of work. For instance, Jessica Rabbit could easily have had her pick of any human guy she wanted. Yet she ran off and married a nobody Toon Rabbit. Why? To get his tea kettle? Hardly seemed likely. She could have spent one night with him, or even just stroked his nose, and he'd have given her his tea kettle plus his house and all his money to boot. And what about that tea kettle? What made it so important? Who had it? And how did they get it? I sank a well into my bottom drawer and struck more bourbon. I opened my closet door and flipped on the old black-and-white TV set I keep in there out of sight of clients. There was a football game on I wanted to catch. The Rams against the Bears, with the Rams trying something new. A Toon Gorilla as linebacker. Nothing particularly unusual about that. Last statistics I saw, nearly 75% of all pro players were Toons. According to some people, it's ruined the game. Made it not so much football as barnyard brawling. Anyway, what makes this new Rams player different is that she's not only a Toon, she's also a female, the first woman to break into the pros. A lot of sports writers dismiss it as nothing but a desperate gimmick on the part of a bottom division team, but I don't know. I don't see how you can call anybody a gimmick who's 8 feet tall, 300 pounds, and can lift the back end of a car with her toes. The game had barely gotten underway, and the new girl on the block had just thrown the Bears' quarterback for a 10-yard loss, when Roger came in, floating 2 feet off the ground, as usual. "What a hectic day I had," he said. His words collapsed inside their balloon like so many beanbags. He took off his coat, walked to the open closet, hung it up, and shut the door on a football sailing toward a wide receiver, all alone in the end zone. "Hey, I was watching that," I said. He looked at me and at where I was pointing.
"You were watching the closet door?" he asked.
I didn't have the strength to explain. "Tell me what you found," I said.
"I hit every one of those gun dealers you sent me to and came up absolutely blank. No luck on the 38.
He sat down across the desk from me, leaned back in his chair the same way I was, and crossed his feet on the desktop, just like mine. It was almost like talking to my reflection in the mirror, except even on my worst morning, I never looked as fuzzy as that. "Too bad. That means it probably came from some minor dealer. It would take us a week to hit those. Tell you what, drop the gun angle for the time being, and concentrate on the tea kettle instead." The rabbit overlapped his upper lip with his lower, achieving exactly the same facial posture he would have if I had bopped him in the jaw.
"The tea kettle? You can't be serious. What can possibly be so important about that crummy old tea kettle?
His next words came out in the close-set, legalistic lettering you see in the contract for a set of encyclopedias.
You promised me we would go partners in this. I assumed that meant we would share the work evenly, good and bad alike. So far you've taken the glamour jobs, and I've done the doggy stuff. How about giving me some real detective work for a change? Something that really matters.
I opened the closet door just in time to miss an 86-yard punt return, catching instead Plastic Man's spiel for his brand of garbage sacks.
Lucky me. You got it wrong, bunny boy, I told the rabbit. This tea kettle looks like it might be the most important angle of the case.
Pish posh. I don't believe it.
It's true.
The TV showed a close-up of a Rams cheerleader wiggling her fanny, although I couldn't get too excited by the sight of a possum in tight pink shorts.
How can you be so sure? Just because Dominic DeGreasy's after the tea kettle, that doesn't make it the Holy Grail.
It's not just Dominic anymore. Your ex-wife has a yearning for that tea kettle, too.
Jessica? You saw Jessica?
Less than an hour ago. She says that you and she bought that tea kettle at an antique auction. She says she always had a particular fondness for it, that you told her to take it with her when she left, but she forgot it. She asked me to scout it up and give it to her. Any of that sound familiar to you? Roger wore the dumbfounded look you see on the face of somebody who walks into a darkened room, flips on the lights, and finds 30 people in there with him, all yelling, "Surprise!"
She told you the two of us bought it at auction?
So she said.
That's a flat-out lie.
His large black eyeballs took a big hop with every word. Almost made me want to sing along.
I got that tea kettle where I said I got it.
So you see, the tea kettle shapes up as being very significant. Roger bent his ears forward 90 degrees, like he was caught in a brisk wind pushing him forward into some place he had no desire to go.
Fine. No more static. Tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it.
Good. Check with the studio prop man who bought the tea kettle. Find out where he got it from, and work backward from there.
Right.
Also, something else. I wrote out a name and telephone number and passed it to him. This is a contact I have at the phone company. Give him a call, set up a meeting, and tell him I want the phone records for Rocco's house on the night he died. All calls, both in and out.
He just gives you that kind of data?
Not exactly. I rubbed my thumb and forefinger together. In return, I supplement his income slightly.
Wow!
Roger's buoyant balloon sailed up so high, it wrapped itself around the single light bulb that illuminated my office. I had to stand on my desk to peel it off.
Bribery, said Roger. That's what I call real detective work.
I crushed Roger's balloon, which the heat from the light bulb had baked into the crackly consistency of a fortune cookie, and dropped it into my ashtray. How have you done with the double S initialed characters? I asked. Roger pulled out his notebook and studied it, although I don't know why. Anybody who could memorize a cartoon script shouldn't have any trouble remembering a report as short as the one he gave me.
I checked Sam Spud and Sad Sack. Both of them had ironclad alibis for the time Rocco died.
Okay, keep trying. Make that your number two priority after the tea kettle. I debated whether or not to let Roger in on the piece of negative I'd found in Rocco's fireplace, but decided not to. It would only encourage him to stick around longer. This way, he put on his hat and coat and got back to business. I spent the next few hours lowering the alcohol content in my bottle of bourbon. Oh, yeah. The Rams won 14-12. They awarded the game ball to Priscilla Gorilla, and a million guys and a million bar stools mourned another fallen tradition. 20. The outside of the DeGreasy Gallery was done up in what they call understated elegance. The gallery had no name on its window, and only a scrolly golden street number, and the single initial D on its heavy, carved walnut door. Inside, a gaggle of sallow-faced, artsy-craftsy types scurried around arranging punch bowls and cocktail napkins, just so for a reception to be held that night, in honor of Hagar the Horrible and his photographer, Dick Brown. I saw Hagar and Brown off to one side, chatting with a pair of early bird country bumpkins. At the Rube's request, Hagar donned his Viking helmet, and he and Brown posed with the two crackers for a photo they could show the folks back home in Podunk, Iowa. As their way of saying thanks, the Hayseeds pasted sold labels on Brown's three most expensive framed original strips. Must have been a good year for sweet corn. One of the artsy-craftsy types pointed out Little Rock DeGreasy to me. The guy bore no resemblance whatsoever to his father. Where Rocco had been baked out of bread dough, his son had been carved in spun sugar. His delicate face gave him a boyish vulnerability. I could easily picture him napping at his school desk while his classmates tied his shoelaces together. He sported this season's high-fashion outfit, what I call the flophouse bedsheet look, drab, loose, and wrinkled. I could almost see Rocco DeGreasy rolling over in his grave. "You, Little Rock?"
"One and the same," he said, without looking at me.
He told a pair of pretty young girls to raise up a particular strip and tilt it left, then right, then left again. I swear he put as much sweat into hanging a thing as Dick Brown had put into photographing it. I stuck my license under his nose. "I'm Eddie Valiant, private detective. I'm investigating your father's death." He made a circle with his thumb and forefinger, and his two protégés locked their strip to the wall. A bit crookedly, I thought, but I never did have much of an eye for art.
"What's to investigate?" Little Rock asked. "Roger Rabbit did it."
"So say the police. I say otherwise." He made a sound halfway between a sigh and a gulp, the sound you'd hear from somebody who'd just discovered that the light at the end of their tunnel comes from an onrushing train.
"As you can see, I'm awfully busy right now."
To illustrate, he took a bunch of strips, stacked against the wall, and stacked them against another wall.
"I've still got scads of work to do before tonight's reception. But I suppose I can spare you a moment. Let me just attend to some details, and I'll be right with you."
While he got in some last-minute whizzing around, I strolled through the gallery. A sign at the front door listed the photographers the gallery represented. The list included Carol Masters, although as I walked along I didn't see a single one of her photos. Little Rock rejoined me.
"Shall we step into my office?"
He indicated a door in the rear. Some office. Storage shed would be more like it. He had framed and unframed strips, cardboard boxes, photos, and assorted papers piled everywhere. It made even my office look neat by comparison. Little Rock unburied a chair for me, and I sat down.
"Sorry for the mess," he said, "but we're terribly cramped for space. I pestered my father for months to enlarge the gallery, but he never saw fit to do so."
"You couldn't go ahead without his okay?"
"Hardly. My father made all major decisions concerning gallery operation. I did exactly as he told me, no more, no less."
He squeezed between two filing cabinets, and popped back out seconds later holding a tray of bottles.
"Care for a drink?" he asked.
He had liquor in about any color you could ask for, except the one I liked best, standard whiskey brown. I told him no thanks. He poured himself three fingers of emerald green, and added equal portions of lemon yellow, sky blue, and sunset orange. I half expected him to stir it with a Crayola.
"Tongues are wagging because I'm here at the gallery today instead of home mourning," he said. "But I considered my father a dreadful tyrant. I'm not the least bit sorry he's dead."
He paused to give me a chance to fall off my chair, but even if I'd been so inclined, in that crowded office, there just wasn't room.
"My father continually berated me for being lazy. Actually, I'm not the slightest bit adverse to good, hard work, so long as it takes me where I want to go."
And where might that be?
He gave me a smile, chock full of grand plans for better days to come.
I long to start my own cartoon syndicate. Nothing as unwieldy as Father's. A quality line of high-class strips, built perhaps around a single talented star. But in the meantime, I run this gallery, and I run it well. I turned a profit every month, yet Father refused to let me operate as I saw fit. He meddled in gallery affairs to the very end. Little Rock finished his drink and made himself another, this round switching to blood red, straight up. I still can't believe it. After suffering through so many years of his domination, I'm finally free.
True, he no longer wore the shackles, yet I had a hunch his body would continue to